Welcome to Rust Belt Science. I'm your host, Maggie Fink.
And I'm Shahir Risk.
And today it is just the two of us. And Shahir has done a bunch of research to discuss a topic that I don't know about, which usually happens, so I'm going to let Shahir take it away.
Okay. Well, first, I have a few questions for you, Maggie.
Yes.
You are actually Dr. Maggie Fink, yes?
Yes.
Yes. And you are Dr. Maggie Fink because you got a PhD, right?
I believe so, yeah.
You went to graduate school. You got accepted to graduate school and you got a PhD. You are a scientist.
I am.
You are a full-fledged scientist, right? And in fact, you're not just a scientist. You are an award-winning scientist. You won a national award, the National Science Foundation Fellowship, yes?
I did.
Yes. You're also not just a scientist. You're also a writer. You wrote a book.
I did.
Yes, that is coming out from Harvard University Press.
Yes.
In 2025, the year of our Lord, 2025, The Color of North.
Yes.
Check it out, right? Not only did you write the book, but you also did some illustrations. You're an artist, too.
I did doodle.
You doodled. Okay, that's what you call it, right? So a scientist, a writer, an author, an artist, you're also a published poet.
This is also true.
This is also true.
I'm very uncomfortable.
You're very uncomfortable. So actually that brings me to my big question. How do you feel about all of that? I mean, that's pretty awesome stuff, right? And that's just like, you know, that's just like what's in your bio, right?
Right. Right.
How do you feel about that? You must feel pretty great about it, don't you?
I feel like you're describing a different person.
A different person.
Yeah. Like you're talking about somebody else.
Somebody else. But in fact, that is you.
That is what my bio says. That is what is on my CV. That is what you can, yes, all of those things are true, but they do not feel like they are true.
They don't feel like, it doesn't feel like these are your accomplishments.
Yeah, they're right. Just accidents.
Accidents. Well, as it turns out, you might have what's known as imposter syndrome.
Oh, are you diagnosing me now?
Well, no, I'm not qualified to diagnose anyone. That's the disclaimer here.
Okay.
But that is, you basically just described imposter syndrome. And that's what I want to talk about today.
Okay, I've heard about imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
This is not the first time you've told me that I have imposter syndrome.
Yes, and it's probably, and I've also admitted to you that I feel like I might have imposter syndrome. So I decided to dig into this a little bit and see what we can learn from the literature that's out there.
Okay.
So do you want to know what the definition of imposter syndrome is?
I do, yes.
Okay, so this is according to a paper you can find in the National Library of Science. This is, the author is Martin Hooker, H-U-E-C-K-E-R. And according to the author's definition, this is a pervasive feeling of self-doubt, apprehension of being exposed as a fraud, despite objective evidence of success.
That is accurate.
Yeah, objective evidence of success. I mean, I just listed out a bunch of things, and that's not like all of your accomplishments. That's just part of it.
Mm-hmm.
These are objective things, but it feels like a computer mistake.
Yeah, I remember the few days before I did my PhD defense, which is where you get up and give a talk and say, this is what I did and this is why you should give me a PhD, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
I told my advisor, I said, I think I'm about to get caught. I said, this is, you're going to kick me out. Like the day before my...
Yeah,
the big moment. I was like, I'm about to get found out that I do not belong here.
That you're a fraud,
and you're all going to realize, not because I did it. You're all going to realize you made a huge mistake.
Yeah,
and it's gone on long enough, and we're pulling the plug. And he was like, "Get out of my office."
So, as it turns out, this is fairly common in high-achieving, high-functioning individuals.
High-functioning?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, right? Exactly. It's like, now wait a second. Now you're reaching, right?
Yeah.
High-achieving, high-functioning individuals, especially in the medical field and healthcare and in academic environments, such as your environment and my environment.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I usually feel like I have conned everybody to make them think that I am good at something that I'm not actually good at.
Mm-hmm. But you are actually good at all the things that you do.
See, I'm not actually sure about that. Like,
you honestly, have your PhD.
If you are listening to us right now, scientist. I don't know why you're listening to us. You're probably just wasting your time, right? Because we're just like talking about a bunch of nonsense. But at least this is like stuff that we researched. So
I know. So, but you think it does? Well, that's talking about somebody else. That doesn't apply to me. I actually am the imposter. Everyone else just feels like they're an imposter. I actually am the imposter.
You are the real deal.
I am.
You're the real McCoy. You are it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, so there's another name for it, and it's not always imposter syndrome. Sometimes it's called imposter phenomenon because it's not necessarily recognized as like a disorder.
Right. This is just
a phenomenon. So a syndrome usually means something that's like, you know, a disorder. It's not really a disorder. It's a phenomenon because it's been observed for several decades now.
Okay.
And in fact, it was in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So a college professor by the name of Rose Clance at Oberlin College, she started talking to her students, who are mostly women. Very successful students, but they felt like they were a bunch of failures.
Mm-hmm.
And she was kind of not surprised because she herself had that feeling her entire life. She was a first-generation college student. She's the first person to be really educated or even get a PhD in her family. And she decided to dig deeper into it, and she noticed it in mostly in women and minorities, so any kind of marginalized group. Typically tend to feel like, well, wait a second, I don't belong here, and I've conned everybody into believing this.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound familiar?
Very familiar, especially being a woman.
Yeah.
Like a lot of women feel that way.
Yeah, but it's not just women, too. And it's not just, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, you feel like, okay, well, you have a PhD. I have a PhD. There's a ton of people who have PhDs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what's the big deal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But as it turns out, you and I have some company. There's some famous people who have reportedly.
Well, this is going to make me feel even more like an imposter.
I know. None of this helps.
No, it makes it worse.
As we will find out, right? It's a very difficult thing to get out of because it's very much of a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So have you heard of a guy named Neil Armstrong?
Yeah.
Yeah. The first person to step foot on the moon.
Mm-hmm. Unless you believe the moon landing was
fake.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, of course. Yes.
Friends of the show
who believed that the moon landing was fake. He was the guy in the movie.
Yeah.
So Neil Armstrong, he felt like a fraud. He felt like, you know, an imposter. And Maya Angelou. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing poet.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite poets.
Mm-hmm.
And she reportedly said that, you know, every time she released a book, is this going to be the book when they finally find out that I've been conning everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then this is where I'm going to get caught as a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of celebrities, too.
Mm-hmm.
Bella Hadid. Mm-hmm. You know Bella Hadid, right? Mm-hmm. The supermodel Palestinian heritage, right? Yeah, no, she does not really think that she's that beautiful.
Well, that's crazy.
Yeah,
I feel like I've heard Jim Carrey talk about this maybe.
Jim Carrey talked about it. Emma Watson, Tom Hanks. Those are just some celebrities that reportedly
have. They're iconic.
They're iconic. They are icons. And they're like, how did I get this? How did I do this? Like that, you know. Can you think of like the most famous, most influential physicist of the 20th century with crazy hair?
Thank you for that hint.
Yeah.
Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein. Do you know what he called himself?
What?
Reportedly, he says, I think of myself as an involuntary swindler. Swindler, he says. Swindler.
It's such an accurate description of how it feels.
Yes.
I think.
Yes. He's just like, oh, you fools. You have no idea.
Especially when you are acting you're putting on like that confidence, and you're like speaking with authority. And in the back of your head, you're like, I am making this all up, even though you're not.
Even though you're not.
But you're like, I'm leading these people astray.
Yeah.
I am selling them a lie that they should believe what I have to say.
About myself. Right. Yeah. It's not that what you're saying is not true.
But they should, that I am not the person that should be telling them any information.
Right.
Because
like,
I don't
who
know.
Who am I?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who am I to tell these people any of this stuff?
Exactly. Right. But you're acting like you're very confident.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I'm just pretending.
Yeah. So, yeah. And by the way, Einstein didn't say this like early in his career when he felt like a loser, no one would accept him. This was like, I think very close to right around the time he died. So already the most accomplished physicist of the 20th century, one would argue, you know, like based on his theories, they invented the atomic bomb and other things.
Right.
And here he is saying, I think of myself as an involuntary. It's involuntary. It's like he can't even help it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's an important part as well, that he can't even help it.
Yeah.
And so it's feeling like you just got lucky or you're just tricking everyone. So the idea is that I am not good, but I am good at convincing people that I am good at something.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to earlier. It's like, you're not trying to trick anybody other than trying to, I'm not expressing it very well, but that's like.
Yeah, it's like, no, I'm not a good chemist. I'm just really good at
pretending to be a chemist
exactly. Or convincing people that I'm a good chemist.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's how it feels most of the time.
It's a terrible feeling.
It is. Yeah. So. You know, but this has been studied, right?
That's been studied. That's good.
And there are some characteristics. Well, you know, don't say it's good just yet because, you know, I don't know if it's curable.
Yeah, okay. That is a question I have.
Well, we'll get to that point.
Okay.
We'll see if there's something you can do about it, right?
Yeah.
We'll see if we can something. But let's first talk about the criteria because, you know, it's easy for people to say, oh, I'm a little ADHD. Well, there's no really such thing as I'm a little ADHD, right? ADHD is like a real condition.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody gets bored. Everybody gets distracted. Everybody gets tired. Everybody gets to the point where they lose attention, right? That's a normal human reaction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is not like kind of jumping on a thing and saying, oh, I must have it because I've doubted myself once, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are some criteria here,
mm-hmm.
and let's just go down the list and then just kind of like maybe put a check mark
mentally
next to see what checks out.
Okay. I've never taken this test before. So
yeah, me neither, but we'll see.
I think I'm going to pass with flying colors.
You're going to pass with flying colors. Well, let's see. So they're not necessarily in any order, but these are the six criteria. The first one is the imposter cycle, right? Where you go, the oscillate back and forth between over-preparation and procrastination.
Oh, boy.
How's that?
That one hurts.
That one hurts? So it's like a deep check?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the pencil kind of rips the paper check kind of thing?
Yep.
Okay, all right,
yep.
All right. So here's how it works, right? It's that feeling like a fraud all the time. So you really have to over-prepare. So that you can overcome that. So now feeling like a fraud becomes the cause of you over-preparing, right? But then also you can procrastinate and leave things for the last minute. And then when it works out, it reinforces the idea that you are a fraud because you didn't prepare and it went well, so people bought it.
Yep.
So then it makes you feel like a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're like, no, I really have to over-prepare. Because I'm going to get caught this time.
Mm-hmm.
So then that results in over-preparation and the cycle continues. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, I'm kind of in that procrastination side of things right now.
Yeah, I mean, you saw me this morning.
I did. I did see you this morning.
And I'm definitely in the over-preparation thing.
Yes.
As you
sit here with the notepad full of
handwritten
notes.
It's, yeah.
And I'm like, I'm just going to show up today.
Yeah. So it's, yeah. It's for reals.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, I gave a public talk, what was it, last week, I think, maybe, mm-hmm. which you graciously attended, and I was...
It was lovely. It was great.
I did not prepare for that talk. Like, I just...
But here's the thing. You probably did.
I was in that procrastination of a just kind of feeling, I don't know.
Like, let's
wing it. I was
not...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because this is the one that's going to get me, so might as well just... Yeah. And then, I mean, I think it went fine.
It was great, it actually. Yeah.
But yeah, that was a rough. Even though I've given, Lord knows how many of these talks before, yeah. I was like, this is the one. And so I really mm-hmm. procrastinated on. I think I was working on it like 30 minutes before I started the talk. Made some final changes, as opposed to other times where I have rehearsed the talk to death and been overprepared. So yeah, this is a real one.
Ouch. Yeah, ouch. And that's just one of the six.
There's six.
Oh, there's six. I know. Are you ready for number two?
Yeah.
Perfectionism, mm-hmm. right? But not perfectionism in the sense of like, I want things to be perfect and I want everyone to come to my standard, right? It's more of just like imposing impossible to reach benchmarks and basically sacrificing your well-being or self-interest for some falsely perceived common good, so that you're just like constantly working and overworking so that you can, you know, it's almost self-destructive because you're setting up these impossible goals and then you're failing. So then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where reassures or reaffirms the idea that you are an imposter because look, I set up this simple thing, which is not simple, and I failed to do it. See, I'm an imposter. So it's kind of like we always go around to proving to ourselves that we are imposters.
I don't think I have this
one. You don't think you have this one?
Right? I don't know. I mm-hmm. feel like I think I have. I think this one is something mm-hmm. I've intentionally tried to get better at. And now yeah. I'm like, I don't care.
Okay. So here's another angle to it.
Okay.
Like perfectionism is that mistakes are perceived as lack of ability rather than just honest mistakes. Like if I make a mistake, then, well, yeah, I must not be up to the task.
I don't know. I think I've gotten a lot better about, yeah, I just made a mistake.
Yeah, and that's good because that
unless you disagree with me.
I agree with you because that's something that I've gotten better at myself. I think this is something that, again, and this is not what the experts are necessarily saying. Mm-hmm. This is just something that I'm just talking from experience. I feel like as you get older in life, you can really start to live with your mistakes a little bit more because you know yourself a little bit better.
Yeah, and I think especially if you're doing research, you know, it's kind of like exposure therapy. There's just a lot of mistakes you make. There's a lot of things that don't work out. So you kind of, those don't faze you as much and you don't take them as personally.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe this has to do with the fact that we are researchers and, you know, like you said, being in the lab, you learn to make mistakes so that you can learn. So maybe that helps us on that aspect. So this one, okay, maybe a light check.
I can see.
Maybe.
It definitely shows up, but I think I just have gotten over the fear of being wrong about something.
Yeah.
I remember sitting in a physics class as an undergrad and the professor asked a question and I raised my hand to answer it right away and I was wrong. Mm-hmm. And he was like,
you're cool. Wrong. Yeah, cool.
And it's like, now you won't get it wrong again.
Ah, that's good.
So that lesson, I feel like I've been less afraid to give a wrong answer or do something wrong. But I can see like the self-sabotaging of like setting unrealistic standards for yourself.
Yeah.
That part makes more sense, but I don't know. Mistakes are, you learn from mistakes.
Yeah, you learn from mistakes.
So I don't take them too personally.
All right. So okay, that so, one,
sorry, light, not light so check much.
Light check, light maybe. Check. We'll put it as a maybe. Okay.
Okay, maybe.
Here's number three, superheroism.
Okay.
So like overdoing. Right?
Oh, I was going to say, I don't watch Marvel movies.
No, I mean either. But I mean, I'm sure they're great, but...
So over...
superheroism. So like, just overdoing, right? I know I do this, right? If I have to like cook for people.
Yeah.
I like cook like everything.
Yeah, you've cooked a few times.
Yes, and I know this like on my soccer team, if somebody gets hurt, like I'm the first person usually mm-hmm. to go and just offer any kind of support.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me feel weird because I feel like maybe I'm just a little too emotional about it. And this is, you know, sports, you know, people get injured. So,
sure, especially when it's a bunch of
dudes.
Bunch of middle-aged dudes.
Right. And here I am. I'm just like the Middle Eastern grandma who's like, here's some baklava, guys. You're too thin. Eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That is you.
That is me.
Okay.
So this one may be a check for me. I've seen you cook before, and definitely superheroism. I've seen that, at least with food. And maybe I'm misinterpreting this idea of superheroism, but...
Say it again?
It's just overdoing. You're overdoing. You're like, I'm going to come in and like fix everything kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do that 100%. Yeah. I come in and be like, hey, I'm going to put myself in a position to bear a lot of responsibility and authority in this like and not like an ego way of like I'm in charge, but like I'm gonna take care of all of this.
Yes,
I will come kind of like
care of
save the day. And
this is not necessarily like being the leader.
No, I know, but it's like
I think it goes to what you're saying, right? This is not about like, okay, I'm in charge now. No,
I'm gonna come in and just like
band-aid everything.
I'm gonna triage everything.
I think
I do that.
Well, so I think 4 and 5 are related to each other.
Okay, let's hit me with them.
So 4 is what's called, and I'm going to mispronounce this, it's called atichiphobia or atichiphobia, which is the fear of failure.
Oof.
Yeah. And 5 is achievemophobia, which is the fear of success. So you have to have both.
Let me tell you about this one.
So terrified of failure and really afraid of success. That's 4 and 5. How does that feel?
Awful.
Yes. Does that feel like you're looking in the mirror?
Yeah, that one sucks. Yeah. I mean, the fear of failure, I feel like I'm going to tell you something I haven't told you yet.
Oh,
that
man.
Is why these two. So I had an art piece that I made about proteins and their friends and da-da-da.
Yeah.
And you told me I was supposed to submit it to a place.
Yes.
And I never did.
I told you I did,
but I didn't do it.
Oh, man. Why?
I was afraid it would get rejected or it would get accepted, honestly. If it got rejected... then that'd be awful and feel terrible.
But what if it got accepted?
Then that would feel terrible because how dare I even think I could have, like...
Yeah.
A mistake was made.
Yes.
This was just a joke. I didn't mean...
Do you know what the term for it? It's kind of like a one-hit wonder, right? If you succeed, then you're like, well, I'm sure this is the only time I'm going to succeed, and I'm going to be just a one-hit wonder, and people are going to say, oh, he just did this thing, and then he can't follow it up with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, reinforces the idea that you're a fraud.
Yeah.
You should really submit this thing. It's really beautiful.
I know. I didn't. That was back in October, and I didn't submit it. But even we've submitted a few things recently to try to get published, both the research and kind of just broader science writing. And it's terrifying.
It is.
To submit something.
And it's even worse when you get feedback.
Yeah, it is not a fun thing. And I think that's a huge hurdle to actually doing anything is these two fears. It's like it's going to get rejected, which you have to be okay with in the science world because stuff gets rejected all the time. But it doesn't make it easier just because you might experience rejection or fail at something. But this one, oof.
Yeah. So it's both.
Sorry, fear of
failure.
Lied to you.
Yeah. Well, It's okay because you're going to submit those somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, it's the that being terrified of failure, but also being afraid of success.
Do you feel that way too?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I do. The fear of failure is kind of a driving force, or at least I've mm-hmm. built it up in my mind to be a driving force. Mm-hmm. And I feel like maybe a lot of our listeners feel that same way. Maybe mm-hmm. some of you don't, you know, just go have a drink or something, celebrate if you don't feel that way. But then once you succeed, you're like, well, A, maybe they made a mistake, right? And then they're going to find that out. I'm going to get an email about it, mm-hmm. right? Or those fools, right? Like, what are they doing? Or now there's another fear of failure. And this is what it basically turns into, like this positive feedback loop mm-hmm, where mm-hmm. one feeds on the other. So mm-hmm, you fail, mm-hmm. so you keep trying, and then you succeed. So then you feel like, oh, well, I need to try harder. Otherwise, I have to follow up that success somehow in yeah. a sense. Otherwise, it proves to me again that I'm just kind of one hit wonder, or I mm-hmm. was able to fool some people, but I'm not going to be able to fool somebody else the next mm-hmm. time I do it.
Yeah, we talked about this the other day with writing a book.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, well, now what? Mm-hmm. Like, the pressure to, like, continue to do things
yeah.
is paralyzing.
It is. You write something and it's successful, or you make a movie and it's successful, and then now people are like, what's your next project?
You know, like, sleep.
It's just, yeah, like, I need to take a break.
I'm never writing a book again.
Maybe read somebody else's book, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, but that's like a, you know, I know we have, is there one more to talk
to? Yeah, there's one
more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You assume everybody feels this way, and then you find out that not everybody feels this way.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. Listeners, if you feel this way, you're not the only person that feels this way.
Right. And
if you don't feel this way, that's also cool too.
That's great.
But when you're feeling it, you feel like you're kind of a little crazy.
Yeah.
Because nobody else must feel this way, because everyone else is
competent.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody walks around looking like they know what they're doing, except here I am, you know, the little person that's driving this whole thing in my mind.
Yeah, I'm just some random person.
Yeah, 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 what do I know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, last one.
Last one is the denial of competence or capabilities. So you deny your own skills, experience, intelligence, or talent. You just say, mm-hmm. Being dismissive of your own talents, essentially. So when I was listing out all of those wonderful things that you have accomplished, like real accomplishments, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like national, international things.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, that's somebody else. Or, you know, I got lucky, or mm-hmm. I just fooled everybody, or it was mm-hmm. a computer mistake, or it was just like a COVID year.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, it's just COVID year.
Mm-hmm.
They got a different Maggie Fink, and I got the letter instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you thought about that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I'm good at. I don't know. I'm like, I'm not really good at anything. It's, you know.
Yeah.
With, like, your skills and talents, I'm like, none.
And that's actually the problem is that when you do succeed, when you do get an award, it reinforces the idea that you're an imposter. So you'd think, like, with an imposter syndrome, you feel like, okay, well, you failed, so then you feel like, but now you're succeeding. Now you have all these things, mm-hmm. all these accolades, all these awards, all these accomplishments, all this experience. You're clearly talented at certain things. But all of that actually just reinforces the idea that you are an imposter. So it's the snake eating its own tail. It's eating its whole, yeah. everything.
Which I have a tattoo of. I shouldn't look at it more to remind myself that yeah. this is all a nasty yeah, yeah. cycle.
And it sometimes kind of leads to this overworking or work martyrdom, as some people would call
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's important to remember that imposter syndrome or imposter phenomenon is really a spectrum. So some mm-hmm. people might feel it a little bit more than others. I know mm-hmm. I have some of it, probably not to the same extent as others.
Yeah. I think it can ebb and flow too.
Yes.
Right. Towards the end of my PhD, I did tell my advisor, I thought this is the end, you're going to kick me out.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was able to feel a little bit more competent in the fact that, yeah, I know I'm the senior person in the lab. I know what I'm doing. I do have the experience and expertise. And then switch to a new job and back to square zero. Like, oh, they just wanted me out of the program, and that's why they gave me my PhD. Like, I didn't actually earn it. They just wanted me out. So it doesn't really count.
Well, like, just give her a PhD and get her out of here.
That's how it still feels sometimes. I'm like, they just were done with me and were like, well, we might as well just give it to her so she can get it. Which also
sounds ridiculous.
I know, because one of the people who awarded me my PhD on my committee is now my boss. So, like, she hired me.
She hired you. Yes.
I know it's an irrational thought, but it can be really all consuming.
And like you said, it does flare up sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it goes up and sometimes...
Like you today, maybe?
Like me today. I was it definitely flare up. And there is... have you heard of the movie Everything Everywhere All at Once?
I have heard of it. Yes. I've not seen it. I've heard it's great.
So, Oscar-winning movie, right? The director, David Kwan, is quoted to have said when he was accepting the Oscar, "My imposter syndrome is at an all-time high." Here's this guy, Oscar winning director, and he gets up there and he's like, this is all time high, right? What am I going to do now? Like, you know, instead of, I worked really hard for this, I earned this, I own it, you know, and he is well within his right to say all of those things. It was the opposite. It's at an all time high, he says. And it does flare up, like you said.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of the imposter syndrome is, like we've already said, well, he's not actually an imposter. I actually am.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have imposter syndrome. I am the imposter.
I am the imposter, right.
So stories like that are almost can make that feeling worse.
Yeah.
Like hearing that these very successful people.
Yeah.
Have imposter phenomenon makes my own imposter feelings
It's worse. Not comforting
it's
at all.
It's the least comforting
it's not
thing.
Comforting at all to know that Tom Hanks or, you know, whoever, right, or Albert Einstein for
it just makes me want to be like,
man, seriously,
man.
Yeah, like, seriously, dude,
I don't care for it. I'm being a little bit more aggressive than I actually mean, but it is you know, saying, oh, Albert Einstein felt that way too. I'm like,
so
well,
you should
I'm
be
not
okay.
Albert
but
Einstein.
I'm not Albert Einstein, you
so,
know?
You
yeah,
know.
Exactly. Exactly. wow.
Off.
We're really getting somewhere with our condition here, aren't we?
Yeah, we're going to leave here and be like,
yeah, this is worse.
No.
Yeah.
Continue, because it's super interesting and hopefully helpful to people.
So where does this come from, right? What are some causes here? And, you know, obviously nobody knows really why someone would have imposter syndrome or imposter phenomenon or, you know, being on that spectrum. But there's a couple of causes here, potential causes. And, you know, a couple of them go back to childhood. So in general, they think that maybe men or women have it more than men.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, a study said that something like 70% of CEOs have some form of imposter syndrome.
I believe that.
I would believe that. Yeah.
I believe that men suffer from it greatly.
Yeah.
I can imagine that that's maybe linked to the higher suicide rates in men as well.
It's possible. It's possible.
Just that feeling can be really crushing.
It can be. It can be because it's a feeling of responsibility and you're not qualified for it.
And I think men are not able to talk about those things as freely as women are. It's kind of accepted that, you know, women feel less competent and are so saying I feel incompetent and have this is a more accepted thing. But men are supposed to be competent and confident all the time.
All the time, yeah. We're not supposed to talk about our feelings. Yeah.
So I would not be surprised if there is some relationship between men having these feelings of imposter syndrome and a lot of the, you know, white males are some of the highest risk of suicide. So,
Yeah, and it might be why we have the incidence, the difference in the incidence rates, mm-hmm. because of reporting.
Yeah,
and rather I think than, that's... Or at least being aware mm-hmm. that that's what you have and then reporting it. Yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's a slightly more serious note. I do think it's important that, you know, obviously women and minorities have a lot more to overcome in a lot of ways
for
in
sure.
these fields.
Absolutely.
But
yes.
the impact of, you know, the white men, mm-hmm. they're suffering in a way that that needs to be addressed as well.
Absolutely.
And
yeah. And there's issues of belongingness too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're the only woman at a position X or Y, or the only person who came, you know, who was a first generation college student mm-hmm. or a first minority or first, blah, 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 you know, that's a burden as well.
Yeah.
Right. It's a huge burden.
Yeah. So, I was going to, oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to ask if there was like this link to a feeling of belongingness and imposter syndrome. Are they kind of the same thing, or are they two separate things that if you don't feel like you belong, you're more likely to feel like an imposter because you can feel like you have the qualifications but don't belong.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Sometimes I feel both of those things, that I don't belong here, and it's not necessarily because I feel like I'm not qualified, but they can kind of another one of those cycles.
You know, I don't know enough to be able to answer that question.
Yeah.
But I think if anyone out there is a social psychologist or a social researcher,
could be on our podcast.
It could be on our podcast. But if you can't, write the answer on a crisp $100 bill and send it to us.
But you know what I'm saying, like,
yeah.
they are two separate things, but I can imagine that they feed off of each other.
I'm sure they reinforce each other.
Yeah, but, especially the belongingness probably more for underrepresented groups in whatever field you or career you have.
Yeah, and this is, I'm just speaking from my experience as a college professor, and especially at a place that is a primarily undergraduate institute. And about 40% of our students are first-generation college students. That's about 10% above the national average.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the students that we serve, almost half of our students that serve, don't know anybody who's gone to college, certainly nobody in their family.
Mm-hmm.
There is an issue of belongingness, for sure. And I bet you that probably feeds into the idea of an imposter, of how did I get accepted here,
mm-hmm.
or, you know. And it's got to be defeating.
Mm-hmm.
So... That is difficult. And that's actually kind of like the environmental aspect of it.
Mm.
But there are some causes that can be traced down to childhood.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So it could be one of two things,
mm-hmm.
you know, more or less, of course. Again, we don't know because we can't go back and do these experiments
mm-hmm.
with kids. But it's something that can be correlated, maybe. Let's say you had a sibling who was perceived to be smarter or better or more athletic or more beautiful or something, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, like you go to school and Mr. Johnston or whatever his name is says,
mm-hmm.
oh, you know, you did fine on this quiz,
mm-hmm.
but boy, your sister or your older brother, oh man, he was so good. How is he doing? Oh, please tell him Mr. whatever says hi. Oh, he was just so good. Oh, he was not just smart and handsome. He was so polite too. And oh, just please tell us, you know, that kind of makes you feel like, well, I mean, I'm not really good enough. So then this kind of makes kids early on try to overachieve, to try
mm-hmm.
to impress. And that can, in some case, lead to imposter syndrome, because when they become successful on their own, they always feel like they're faking it
mm-hmm.
because they were never really the one.
Oh, yeah. This one.
But I think the second one might resonate with both of us, actually.
Okay.
So this is usually the older sibling, right?
Yeah.
Or the sibling who is determined to be the smart one in the family.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's this family pressure to be perfect. And I feel
mm-hmm.
like I was certainly that. I'm the
mm-hmm.
oldest in my family. You are the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, oh, you know, you were like kind of the smart kid, the
mm-hmm.
the one who always got decent grades
mm-hmm.
or didn't get into too much trouble or whatever
mm-hmm.
it was. And then there's this natural pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Even though my parents had no idea what I was doing most of the time. I know they had no idea what you were doing most of the time. But you had to put on this image.
Mm-hmm.
And that can also create this idea of an imposter. Like, here's this idea that people have about me, that I'm a superstar.
But yeah, you're always actually putting just, you're just performing.
She's performing. Right.
And inside you're just like...
Yeah, you're just like, they have no idea where I was last night.
Sorry,
or,
mom and dad.
Or what I was doing. Like, like, oh, you know, my little girl, she's wonderful. My big guy, he's amazing.
Yeah, this is something probably everybody can relate to. You know, if you... And I can relate to both of these things, the oldest sibling.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I wasn't smarter than any... I always tell people, I'm not smarter. I just did better in school because I like school and I'm good at school.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things I'm really dumb at. Like, you keep reminding me that I have a flat tire every time you see me and I still haven't gotten
it fixed. It's not being done. That's just...
But that's a, you know,
lazy.
There's something... No.
No.
And there's just some things I'm not good at, like maintaining my car. But then the other one, you know, I was... And I think we can probably relate because we both have younger sisters who are kind of more famous in our social circles.
Right.
Oh, you're Hannah's sister.
Right. Yeah,
How is Hannah, you know? And I can relate to that feeling. And I also had a cousin, who I was always compared to as well. Well, she's so good at that. And if you just worked a little bit more, you could be as good as her at that. We played the same instrument. We were both altos in choir. I was always kind of being compared to her, and she was way better at the oboe than I was. I didn't care that much about the oboe. But yeah, that those things that we take with us from when we were younger really come back.
Yeah.
And can really impact. And there's so much good that we gain from those experiences, too, that we're not talking about.
Right. I think we're only talking about the negative things. But, you know, it does make you work really hard. And, again, you have actually achieved quite a bit.
Yeah, when you stop.
And you can't say it's because of that. I don't want to make it seem like,
you should always
treat your children like that because then they're going to. No, but in spite of all of that, it's actually been. You're a very successful person. You're living your life.
No, and sometimes I do. I was just talking to my PhD advisor the other day because I had my first author paper was published in a couple months ago.
Wonderful.
And he was like, you know, this is really great. This is a big deal. Like, and I said, yeah, I'm really proud of it. I worked really hard.
Yeah.
On this project, on this paper, and I did almost all of the work.
Yeah.
And I like said that out loud to myself and to him. And that's really the first time I've ever been like, yeah, I deserved this paper.
Right.
I did the work.
Yeah.
I earned it.
Yeah.
And I am proud of it. And it was exciting.
And yeah, taking ownership of it. Like, that's great.
So I'm trying to do better because then it makes the rest of your work so much easier when you're not thinking about, instead of thinking I shouldn't be here. Like, what do I actually need to do to get my job done?
Yeah.
No, sorry, I just rambled a bunch there.
But that's important to be able to take ownership instead of just saying, well, I don't know. This is really all a facade.
Yeah, and I think I was telling you earlier about the women's rugby star, Ilona Mayer, I think her name is. She's super awesome.
Yeah.
And she was in an interview last week where somebody asked her, oh, how do you deal with imposter syndrome?
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't have that. She's like, I worked hard for everything that I have.
Perfect.
And I'm proud of myself, you know, for the work. So hearing her say that, I'm like, okay, I can be proud and acknowledge I have worked really hard to get where I am and to have these things. And you can hold both things of I'm lucky and I earned it. Right.
Those are all, I mean, that's very, very healthy to be able to do that without being a narcissist, because that would be on the other end of the spectrum where you are just like, well, of course, you know, kneel down and worship me because I'm the best thing in all of creation. you don't want to go to that end either. It's just giving praise where praise needs to be mm-hmm. given, even if it's to you. And mm-hmm. sometimes we tend to not do that. And there's another reason why that can happen.
Yeah, sorry, I'm interrupting all of your
notes. This is great because it's segueing nicely into this.
Oh, okay.
Which is the environmental factors,
okay.
the culture itself. So if you grew up in parts of Europe or in the Middle East or in parts of, you know, sub-Saharan Africa or in the Far East or in the United States, cultural pressures are going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
How much can you brag? How much do you put yourself down? You know, if you grew up in the Midwest, for example, and I'm
yeah.
just going to say this as an outsider who is a transplant to the Midwest and to the Rust Belt, as far as I can tell,
everybody in the Midwest,
especially women,
yeah.
it is poor form to brag about anything, even if it's true.
What you can brag about uh-huh. is getting a sale on something or getting a deal.
Oh, yeah, yeah, getting something.
You can brag about that.
Oh, yeah, we can brag about that.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
the coupons.
There's you're like, hey, your shirt yeah. looks so beautiful. I got it on sale,
right? And I had a coupon.
And, yeah. So you can brag about
oh,
that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Just for the right. record. But
I think everybody should be able to brag about that.
I think so.
Yes. Yeah. But bragging mm-hmm. about any kind of accomplishment other than like, you know, like even if it's like your recipe.
Yeah.
Which people hold very, very, I mean, food is everything in every culture.
Yeah.
But you don't brag about yourself. You don't toot your own horn,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't boast, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, Midwestern mm-hmm. Protestant ethic. You don't boast, right? That's not a good form
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for you young man and especially for you young lady.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You don't boast. You should be humble. And so what happens? But also, there's another aspect of it. If you are a naturally talented person, things do actually come easy to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you feel like, well, I mean, anything that I do is not that hard.
Right.
So
right.
why are people losing their mind over this? I
right.
must be fooling them.
Right.
You know, I have,
right.
you know, my friends, and one of them is a very talented photographer.
Yes, he's very talented.
Amazing. Takes amazing pictures. And
yeah.
he has been rewarded by it, by just kind of rising to a high rank in the company where he is, you know, their kind of lead media
mm-hmm.
person.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I don't work. I don't know why they're paying me. I just click and shoot. I was like, you don't understand.
Yeah.
This does not come. And, you know, he's 50 right now, and he just does not feel like he's ever worked as a photographer.
But do you think he has imposter syndrome, or is he just, is that?
I don't know.
Because it's like.
Yeah, when it comes to that,
yeah.
he has imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
When it comes to that very thing,
nothing
which is
helpful.
A big thing because that's like his career,
yeah.
right? It's his
yeah,
job.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, especially surrounded by a lot of artists in the community who say, I am an artist.
Oh,
this
yes.
is my thing.
Yes.
And he is a true artist,
yeah.
right? He, with a camera, he's a true artist. I mean, his pictures are amazing. His
mm-hmm.
photos are great. He's not doing it for art's sake, necessarily. He's doing it because he's talented and
mm-hmm.
they come out really amazing. But what I always hear him say is like, why are these people actually paying me? Why are they picking me to go to these, you know, big conferences and big challenges and big shoots
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and but he forgets how much preparation he does. He forgets how much work he actually puts into it, how much thought, how much he learns about the gear and the, you know, the stuff that goes into it, because he reduces all of that to, I just point and click and the camera does the work.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely not what he does. It's
right.
only a very, very, that's like that right. last bit.
Yeah.
And this, there's a lesson to be learned here, I think, that again, it goes back to kind of discounting, removing all of that, you know, the preparation that you actually do. And so, you know, on that note, when it comes to procrastination, I know I personally have, like, my own view of myself is that I'm lazy. I leave
yeah.
everything to the last minute. I'm a procrastinator. But I have been told that I'm not.
I agree, you are not.
But that's my view, and I will probably take it with me to the grave, that I am a lazy person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I'm doing exactly essentially what my friend is doing.
Right,
I recognize it in him and he recognizes it in me. And we're like that Superman meme, the Spider-Man
meme.
Yeah. We're like, you, wait, you. And it's just so hard to get out of that mindset.
Yeah, because you're a very incredibly talented teacher, lecturer, and it seems like...
I just get up there and talk.
I know, you just, I mean, you do, you just get up there and talk, and it just happens. But, you know, people are like, oh, it's...
Stop.
He gets some of the best student comments.
Well,
because he's excellent at it, and
I enjoy it. I really enjoy it.
I
think that comes across.
But just you do put a lot of thought and intention behind what you do as well, and you're incredible at it. But you're like, I'm not that good. Well, you do think you acknowledge that you're a great teacher.
I kind of had to because the chips were stacked against me every time I read reviews or, you know, people wanting me to come and give lectures, and they keep inviting me the year after that. And every year I say, this is going to be the year where they don't invite me anymore, you know, to teach medical school students or whatever it is. Every year.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, this is going to be the year that they're going to be like, oh, you know, he's slacking off.
Yeah.
We finally figured it out.
But you're not. Yeah. But it hasn't happened yet, and you keep getting better and better, student comments.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. But so, you know, in my reading on this, I've uncovered a relationship to the Dunning-Kruger effect. You're familiar with the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Is that where you...
Yeah, you think you know when you don't know, but when you actually know...
Yeah.
You think you don't know.
Right.
So the idea is that the more knowledge you have about something... the more you would self-evaluate yourself as if you don't really know that much about it.
Yeah.
So the more you know about something, the more you realize that you actually don't know.
Which is basically getting a PhD, what that feels like.
Which is basically getting a PhD. You know, after you get a PhD, you know, I think people, a lot of people, I'm not generalizing here, but a lot of people who don't have a PhD, they think that you get this PhD and something clicks in your mind and all of a sudden you understand that you are a smart person. But in fact, with most of us, the opposite happens. Most of us, that is statistically the case. Most of us, the opposite happen. You fight, and you're at the precipice, at the frontier of learning. You are asking questions that have never been asked before, and you may or may not even get a glimpse of an answer. And finally, you become an independent thinker in one way, and you... Instead of like, oh, I have expanded on where there used to be a cliff, now there's new ground, you actually like fall off the cliff.
Yeah.
I think intellectually you might be better at certain things, but I think you actually see over the cliff and you realize there's so much that we don't know.
Yeah. It's shocking.
It is shocking. It is shocking.
How little we know. And that's a scary thought.
It is. And it kind of dawns on you. So this might be tied to it. And this might be why more people in academic circles, more people who are kind of high skill, high education, high performance have this imposter syndrome or imposter phenomenon. Because you kind of see what you can't see.
And I think, too... You don't have to be like a PhD to experience this. I think if you're working at a company and you make your way up really high, just speaking to friends and family who've done that, that feeling of how did I get here? I don't deserve to be here, right? So as soon as you kind of start to be successful, if you're prone to these feelings, that's when it really starts to show up. It doesn't have to be in academic circles. I think it's prominent in academic circles, maybe because some of us just want to punish ourselves by getting a PhD and going through that. I don't know. But I know plenty of people who are so far outside the world of academia and are in jobs and are successful and come home and are like, I'm going to get fired tomorrow. I'm going to get found out. And I don't think it's unique to what we do as scientists, but it can be really difficult and debilitating.
You're absolutely right, because there's evidence that this flares up when there is some sort of positive status elevation or status change. So if you getting a degree is just one of them,
So you
graduated from college, you're like, oh my God, how did I do this? I failed like everything, but you didn't because you succeeded.
Right.
Or I got a PhD. So that's one example. Mm-hmm. But you also mentioned many other examples. Mm-hmm. So like hitting a milestone of some sort or getting promoted or mm-hmm. being in a leadership position. Mm-hmm. You're like, what the crap am I doing here? Who's the idiot who put me in charge?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there is a bit of self-doubt, but it's not even just self-doubt. It's almost like how confident you are in how you conned everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. This is not mm-hmm. just self-doubt.
Right.
This is like, I'm playing this game. I'm playing a dangerous game.
Yeah. It can feel like, you know, the feeling of I'm going to go to work and get fired today is different than just self-doubt, I think.
Yeah. I mean, just the idea of, you know, again, I'm getting into my career right now where I'm kind of like what they call mid-career scientist. And eventually, you know, with how small our department is, they're going to want me to try to be chair of department. And I'm like, is this how the entire department going to collapse? Like, this is not...
I'm laughing, but I know you're serious.
I'm serious. This is not a passing thought. This is a major concern. And I'm warning my colleagues and say, if you want this department to collapse, put me in charge of it.
Yeah,
I don't want this to happen to us or to our students because I'm going to ruin it. Right. Mm-hmm. Just leave me in my corner, do what apparently I guess I'm good at, like mm-hmm. teaching students and mm-hmm. running a lab and, you know, like whatever I can like manage to con people. But I feel like I can't even con people into the other stuff. Right.
Yeah.
The big leadership roles.
Yeah.
Will it really burn down? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I know you. This is not our first time having this conversation. So
no,
I know.
Not.
He's not just joking. This is literally something that
is literally going to burn down.
I hope having people around, not just you, Shahir, but anyone who experiences this, having around to say, no, it'll be fine. I don't know. I do have some concerns about you being chair of a department.
Yeah, I think there's some real concerns. Right.
Not because you're an imposter, but you're just not good at something.
There are some things I'm generally not good at. Right. Yeah.
But, yeah. Okay.
So.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh at your very
No, you should definitely laugh at this one because that one is for real. Well, so, is it all bad?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a good point to kind of see if we can wrap things up on.
Okay.
Is it all bad? Is imposter syndrome all bad?
Feels all bad.
It feels all bad, right? Well, in a sense, it keeps you humble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it keeps you learning.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you kind of reach a point where you're like, look at me, I'm the best, mm-hmm. right? But if you always feel like you're lacking in something, it might drive you to seek learning, learn from the world, learn mm-hmm. from others around you,
mm-hmm.
keeps you achieving.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So in fact, it does kind of give you kind of a backwards way of kind of an ambition. It's not really an ambition. It's more just to kind of like reinforce this feudal cycle that you live. You're just feeding the cycle.
Yeah, I feel like it's motivated to continue the con.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what it feels
it's like. Ooh, this is working. It's rolling. Let's keep doing it.
Just got to keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's find a new group of people to to con it, to thinking that we're good at something.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there might be just like, there might actually be a natural human trait. I mean, this might be why it's so common. You know, we're talking about like 70% of CEOs
that
would admit to it. Who knows how many are not admitting to it.
Mm-hmm.
How many people are actually living with this? A huge chunk.
Yeah,
so this might not be necessarily like, and this is why I said earlier on, this is not a syndrome in a sense of a disorder, right?
It's not a flaw. You don't have a flaw.
I don't think so. I mean, I can tell you that it feels like it because that's the whole point of it. It feels like you're imperfect. But then again, nobody is perfect. So we have to kind of remind ourselves mm-hmm. of that. But there might be some social or evolutionary reason why we might
mm-hmm.
have that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you feel like you're perfect and you don't need an improvement and you don't need to learn from others or from the world,
then nobody likes you.
Well, yeah, of course. Then you're a big, you know, big jerk and no one wants to be around you.
Mm-hmm.
And we are social animals, but it also keeps you learning from the group. So mm-hmm. everybody's learning from the group and everybody's learning from the group. Mm-hmm. So part of it is that our social animal, you know, mm-hmm. background and mm-hmm. that continues to today. We are social animals. Mm-hmm. And so it's about building ties with communities. It's kind of a cruel way of doing it, but evolution doesn't care.
Yeah, evolution doesn't care about your feelings.
No, evolution doesn't care about your feelings, apparently.
That's an interesting
idea. Unless they're
going to
be self-destructive, right?
Yeah, I think it does. That is super interesting. It does form connections mm-hmm. with people to, you know, express these feelings and to rely on other people. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I like this idea.
So, but obviously the downside is things like burnout and anxiety, mm-hmm. depression, isolation even, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, and look, there are some like self-help.
Oh my gosh.
Self-help.
There you go. You got it.
I can't even say the name of the thing that I need.
You're
yeah.
a fraud.
I'm a fraud.
Self-help.
I can't talk, but I have a podcast. Talk about fraud. Right?
Yeah.
Talk about a fraud. And so one that I have not read these books, but I kind of looked up some books like mm-hmm. How Do You Help mm-hmm. with Imposter Syndrome?
Yeah.
And one caught my attention. It's called The Middle Finger Project. Have you heard of that one?
I can't. Maybe.
Yeah, The Middle Finger Project. Maybe. It's like just, you know, give your imposter syndrome the middle finger and just mm-hmm. tell it, get the whatever out of here.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Easier said than done. You know, it's like I tell my students, don't freak out about chemistry. And
they're
then it's
out.
Not like, yeah. oh, thank you, Dr. Risk. You've changed my life by just saying those simple four words. And I just flipped a switch in my mind. And
yeah.
now I don't freak out about anything
right.
at all. No, that's
right.
not how it works. So maybe, you know, this book or there's another one called The Imposter Syndrome Workbook. So you, mm-hmm. I'm guessing this is a book that you work through mm-hmm. some of your feelings. But again, this is not something that I think you can easily get rid of. It's something that you just have to live with. And learn to navigate, like the way that you mentioned about mistakes, for example.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Being in the research environment, it is by default, like if you cannot handle mistakes, you just can't be a researcher.
Yeah.
You just can't. That's just not something that you can't live without.
Yeah.
You have to live with it. This is not the same as like if you're like a brain surgeon. You know, mistakes are going to be obviously high stakes, but when you're experimenting, you're out there, the, you know, the edge of knowledge, it's going to be more mistakes than not.
Yeah. I think there are, going back to that middle finger thing, I know we're wrapping up here and hopefully ending on a good note, but I was just listening to a podcast this morning with a psychologist talking about people who have ruminating thoughts, which I think imposter syndrome can, some of those, everyone has ruminating thoughts that are kind of intrusive. And for imposter syndrome, I think that some of those can become ruminating. And she had a tip of singing those thoughts out loud to yourself, right?
Singing those thoughts.
Like, yeah. I'm a stupid idiot and don't belong here. Actually, I can't remember the name of the song she recommended, the tune, to try. But she's like, that actually does... Like the research shows these yeah. little things that you can do help those things become not as debilitating and obsessive. I can't remember the name of this.
I think that's actually really cool. I think I did things like this when I was a little kid because mm-hmm. I would always have some sort of tune in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I would always have the voice of telling me how terrible I am at mm-hmm. something or how much of a failure I am at some things mm-hmm. or how lazy I am. The lazy thing is a big
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, they would inevitably merge into mm-hmm. some sort of tune,
mm-hmm.
right? And maybe that's why I'm not suffering of imposter syndrome as much as maybe I would have been.
Yeah. So I think if I don't know, I just thought that was interesting. And I feel like the middle finger, like, yeah, I think uh-huh. there is some power in kind of confronting those thoughts out loud with a physical action
yeah.
that can really help. And, you know, even talking and admitting that I have imposter syndrome feels really bad because
yes.
it's like, oh, I know I actually am really good and successful. Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but
exactly.
So, you know, but you have to figure out a way to move forward and how to deal with it, because then you can't do your job. And then you will get fired if you...
Or at least it's going to make it very difficult.
Yeah, it can be really... It can be hard. So, it's not... I don't know. I don't want to feel like, we just have to live with this. There are things you can do to make these thoughts... Not that you'll ever feel like you deserved what you have.
Yeah.
But when they do become really intrusive and hinder your ability to find joy in your work, I think... That's you can go ahead and sing those thoughts out loud. Maybe we'll post in the show notes that particular episode, but
I think it's sometimes there's this, you just have to talk to yourself about it.
Yeah.
And do you think it might help to be able to look back at your accomplishments, like sit there and just read your own CV if that's something that you have, or just like look at your own accomplishments? Goes against every like Rust Belt Midwestern thing, you know, don't go back and like read your accomplishments out loud.
Yeah.
But does it help? Because I feel like the more success you have, the more you're like, oh man, yeah, that's the one time I fooled these guys. And then this is the next time I fooled the National Society for everything. And
I don't know. I just updated my CV because... We got something published today, actually.
Yes.
And I was scrolling through it, and I was like, wow, I have done a lot of things. And I was like, I'm really grateful I've gotten to do all these super fun things. And I think the imposter syndrome comes up even more when you're getting to do something you enjoy doing.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. I really enjoy getting to do this podcast. And I'm like, all right, when are they going to pull the plug on it? Because we're bad. So I think that, but I'm really grateful that I got all these opportunities to come and talk to people or publish something or do research here and get this award, and being grateful for those opportunities and not viewing them as times I got something that I didn't deserve.
Yeah.
Other people are deserving too. And it just so happened I was the one that got picked for that particular thing. And the next time I might not, and somebody else might get it. And so it's not a reflection of my abilities. And I'm saying all this now, and I'm probably going to wake up tomorrow when I have to teach organic chemistry lab and be like, I'm a total fraud. I've been trying to just be grateful for all the things that I have and the opportunities, because I'm very lucky to get to be a scientist and to do all these crazy things. And so, look through your accomplishments and just view them with gratitude and not a reminder of all the times you conned somebody into letting you speak or something.
So an attitude of gratitude.
Yeah.
An attitude of gratitude.
So hippy-dippy.
Oh, yes, yes.
I was listening to this podcast this morning about these ideas, and so that's why I'm thinking about it, because it's not fun to be in that headspace of this imposter syndrome. So I have a lot of sympathy for people who might be listening to this and have that experience. It's not fun. It sucks.
So have gratitude.
And it's making me a little emotional because, It's hard, and you deserve it.
Well, Maggie, I'm grateful for you, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to have this podcast.
Yeah,
I'm grateful for all the support that we got from Notre Dame and from IU South Bend.
Yeah.
And this has been wonderful.
This has been fantastic. Is there anything else you want to say? Any last minute quotes from famous people who have imposter syndrome?
Apparently, like everybody does. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people. And if you're out there and you're feeling it, you're probably better than you think you are.
Yeah.
Not us, though. We're terrible.
No. Yeah. We're grateful you're listening to us talk about nothing.
Yes.
You know.
So keep listening. We're going to keep talking about nothing.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Shahir.
Thank you, Meg. At the end of our show, we would like to thank you, our lovely listeners, and our awesome audience for spending your time with us. We thank the Notre Dame College of Science and the Indiana University South Bend College of Arts and Sciences. Special thanks to the wonderful people at the Notre Dame Studios. Coming to you from beautiful South Bend, Indiana, in the heart of the Rust Belt, this is Rust Belt Science. I'm Shahir Risk.
And I'm Maggie Fink.
And we'll catch you next time.